Greetings, friends. This is Dr. Mark Sharona, and I want to welcome you to The Edge podcast, where all things theological, psychological, spiritual, and cultural will be explored so that you and I might understand the times and know what to do about them. Enjoy. Dr. Cheryl, I've kind of been a fan of Walter Brueggemann since about 1979. Now, I was raised Presbyterian before I became a Pentecostal, and so I was exposed to some of the scholars, Old Testament scholars, New Testament scholars in the Presbyterian world. And when he wrote Prophetic Imagination, given that I've got those kind of proclivities, I was deeply impacted by his understanding of an alternative imagination to the prevailing view of empire. And he focuses in a portion of that on the way in which Jezebel has not been faithfully handled. And it's become so popular to take the Jezebel story from 1 Kings and then connect it to the Jezebel incident in the book of Revelation. And create a narrative that I would say, and I want to be careful because I know many of my friends would disagree with this, but I think it's important that we have these conversations because healthy disagreement might lead to clarity. I don't know that what they're doing is faithful with the text. Talk to me a little bit about what would be a faithful approach. Let's start with the Jezebel story in 1 Kings, Naboth's vineyard, et cetera, and then maybe the book of Revelation, and where we need to see that from a scriptural perspective and not use that in a way that it becomes a hammer of the witch.
Well, of course, we have the character of Jezebel in the story there in Kings, where she is someone who despised the prophets, and she represented the empire. And she was someone who despised the prophets to the degree that she wanted them killed. That showdown kind of thing there. I think it's wrong to extrapolate from that that there is some kind of feminine spirit involved. And that's what I see today, is that because this king, this queen, this character had this, because there are all these male characters, kings, who do all
equally
things
wicked.
And equally but we don't say, well, that's the masculine spirit, right? But for some reason, there's one queen, and then they'll extrapolate that to the daughter, Athaliah, that there's something wrong with the feminine, or the rise of feminine power. That text has nothing to do with feminine power as much as greed and fault, idolatry, which is can either men or women have that.
Right.
And in Revelation, we see this as a false teacher. But it, Jesus doesn't say, you need to fight the rise of this feminine spirit.
Right.
It's this false teacher that extrapolates there. So why is it that we make one character in the Bible to become a trope for this rise of the feminine power? And then I think what we've done too is we've merged witches with Jezebel, and it's become just hard to separate. Are they talking about witches? And why are women going to Wicca? Why are women going to earth spirituality and goddess spirituality? Just what I had said to you earlier, many of them do so out of pain, that there's something that has just hurt them so deeply that they want a place where they will feel empowered and safe. So if we want this type of spirituality to rise, just keep what we're doing by dismissing the feminine power, by not even allowing any sense of the feminine in God at all. Like if we call the Holy Spirit she, people get bent out of shape. Well, the Syriac Christians for 500 years
called her
she. It's a feminine word in Hebrew, ruach. So there is this But God is not male or female.
Female, exactly. God is spirit.
God is spirit. But if we do not allow the feminine in any way of empowerment, or the Imago Dei, the image of God, then we're going to continue this exodus, what I see happening among women today, of just leaving and abandoning the faith. And they don't have to. I want to run after them and say, you don't know about the Holy Spirit. Let me tell you about power and feminine power. Let me give you some, you know, I want to just run after them. But then they will look at me and say, do you know of a safe place? Is there a safe place for me? And some things you try to, I try to hide some things from our children, right? And I try to hide certain things from my female students. I don't want them to know what's being said by certain preachers and ministers about the feminine, the rise of the feminine. I don't want them to know, because I want them to stay in the tradition. I don't want to lose them.
Interesting, you know, the rabbis called the theophany of the Spirit Shekinah,
which is feminine. Yes.
The Psalm 68 speaks of the feminine side of God in one portion. The maidens that are sent out into the streets when wisdom cries out. You know, that God says, I will both gasp and pant like a woman in labor. Why do you suppose we have such a difficult time? First of all, we turn God into male or female, which he's neither.
Neither.
So then we take what Jesus says as Father, we equate with masculinity, which is not what the whole issue of the creed is about at all. Why can't we see what we need to see here? Is it a language game again? Is it we can't hear the tenor and the spirit of what God is endeavoring to tell us? When you wrestle with that, what do you come up with?
Well, you know, by object relations theory, where we construct an image of God from childhood, that image comes to us from our parents, from a church, from pastors, from teachers, from society, Often, the image that is given is God is a man. God is a man. And women learn to do what I call the skill of insertion. I grew up singing, Father Abraham had many sons. And we little girls would go,
I'm included.
Me too. Or they would say, we know, you know, God made man in his image. And I would go, me too. Well, I think women today are not wanting to have to continually do the skill of insertion. That we're wanting to say, I don't have to sit here and work so hard to put myself into this space. It's a space where I belong. I'm a daughter of God. I am made in the image of God. And the way I like to see the image of God in masculine or feminine is the I and the not I. The first image we get of God comes from the maternal, the mirroring, that we learn basic trust. The mother looks and the eye, and there's this delight in the face, and the mother turns and the baby says, who am I? And the mother says, you are beloved, you're delighted. And that gives us our sense of holding and being and trust and basic sense of self. And I think that's the part of God that will never drop us, that has us written in the palm of God's hand, that your mother and your father will forsake you, but I will never let you go. I will always hold you. That is the we. You know, if we look at the life of the Trinity, it is in that wonderful life. It is the I and the we together. And it's in that dance. And the masculine is more of the I, the other. We would use terms like immanence and transcendence. So we're not saying God is man or God is woman. I'm saying God is immanent. That's a feminine characteristic. God is transcendent. That's a masculine characteristic. So, dear woman, when you were holding your baby and loving that baby, you were imaging God to that baby. Dear Father, when you were saying, I want you to have assertiveness, the I, you're imaging God to your child. So there, we need both that, don't we? The mother and the father.
Absolutely.
And God is neither one. Then you get this skewed God. And I've known some feminists rejecting that otherness. And God just becomes this warm soup in the universe that radically immanent. That smothers me. A feminine God. Or the masculine, totally other, up there looking down. Not, and I love what you said about the Shekinah. You know, the Talmud says that when Israel was laid low, that the Shekinah was in the dust with her. So the Shekinah is the one who is the
suffers with.
And the Hebrews, you know, had those three feminine images, the Shekinah, Shabbat, Sabbath is feminine. We welcome the Queen Sabbath. And the mother, you know, is the one who would light the Sabbath candle. That's a feminine. And then Lady Wisdom, who, and notice like the feminine voice in Proverbs. She's in male space. She's in the gates of the city. What is she doing? Calling out. So a lot of times women are seen to be witches or Jezebel because they have, like I said, in the 1600s, calling out. They were too loud. They were too opinionated, too spirited. Well, if you look at Lady Wisdom, she has all of these qualities that I think women can say. She's calling out. She is in the public space. Women have been relegated to the private sphere. Lady Wisdom is in the public sphere and the polis. So there's so many rich images, and that's back to where I said, you need good biblical theology, really good biblical theology, and not to be afraid of the feminine, that it's something that's, people always go to the worst stereotype
right. To
make a point, and then everything is discounted with that. To say there's feminine in God is not to have goddess. It's to say both men and women reflect the image of God.
From a pastoral perspective, I've spent a lot of time listening to women's stories. I've probably learned more listening than I have doing any of my teaching or preaching or studying. There are many women that have told me horrific stories of abuse from childhood that mm-hmm. have been traumatized mm-hmm. deeply, and mm-hmm. to see them now flourishing is mind-boggling to me, given the trauma they went through. But what I didn't have in the early days, and I'd like you maybe to unpack this a little bit more, I didn't fully understand the God who suffers with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk a little bit about that, because I think that there are people watching mm-hmm. that are traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And because much of what we've been taught in terms of faith in relationship to Christ, it's all done, it's all paid for, but there's no sense of a God who suffers with
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
And I think that could be one of the most therapeutic keys that could ever revolutionize a fresh awakening of what the Spirit is doing.
I think so. The God who suffers with us, the God who is not impassible God looking down on our suffering, but the God who is. And a few years ago I did an article on Judges 19, that horrible story. You know, I say there's
the concubine.
Yeah, there are certain places I don't go without the Spirit. There are certain mm-hmm. passages I don't
go.
They're painful.
Mm-hmm.
So to go to Judges 19, the question is, you know, God is not mentioned there at all. Where is God? That's the cry of the concubine. She's thrown out. She is gang raped, and she is at the door and dies in the dust.
Mm-hmm.
And in that piece, I say, so let's ask, where is God? Let's go to the Shekinah. When Israel is low in the dust, where is the Shekinah in the dust? So when that guy opened up the door that morning and kicked at her to get up, he was kicking the Shekinah. He was kicking God in the dust with her. The glory of God had gone so far down in that book of Judges that it was down in the battered body. And then this man mutilates it even further.
Cuts it up.
So you're cutting up the glory of God by doing that. And when I said that a few days ago on Twitter, one young woman said, "You have no idea what this means." She said, "God was in the carpet dust with me when I was abused as a child on that carpet. I know now that the Spirit of God was there. Not just looking down, but there." That's helpful for me and for any person who sees that that question always begs to be answered, where was God? And the Spirit of God is the one who comes to us.
And it reminds, you know, back in the charismatic renewal, the whole emphasis on inner healing and going back and revisualizing the past, there was something very unkind about that, because it was as if you've got to re-envision what happened, when, which almost separates God from that moment, as if now you're going to look at it in a different way because God's coming into that situation. The motive was right, but the theology was off.
Yeah.
Because if we can't see Christ suffering with us,
right,
there's something wrong with our understanding of the God who suffers.
Yeah. And the groaning of the Spirit.
Yeah, talk about that.
You know, the Spirit in creation is groaning, and we're groaning. And I, you know, the dream that you said you had where Violet Kightley came to you and about that groan. Why is the church not groaning? She said, you know, the Spirit is groaning.
Right.
Why are we not groaning?
Yeah, and in the dream, because she's already, she's with the presence of the Lord. But, I mean, in the dream, she was saying to me, deep convulsions are taking place and they're going to get more intense.
They are.
And we need to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Let me go back to what I said earlier about people going to earth spirituality and this deep convulsions. I think one reason we don't understand what's happening is in the heavenlies, in the earth, is because we're not tied to the creation enough.
Wow.
Years ago, I was at Roman Catholic Pentecostal Dialogue, and I was with a group of academics. We're in a retreat center outside of Zurich that had first been a Cistercian monastery, where the Cistercian missionaries came in, Christianizing that part of Switzerland. And so we were doing our documents. We were arguing. We were going at each other, doing good ecumenical work. I was fascinated what was going on next door. A group of women from the Swiss Reformed Church were having a retreat, and they were into the earth spirituality, goddess, whatever. And I would go by their room, and there was a pentagram on the floor, and then at night I would watch them out dancing around the moon and all. So I asked, why have you come this, you know, fascinated by this? And I was told, our Protestant Swiss Reformed Christianity gave us nothing in terms of embodiment. It was all doctrine, the head. You know, when Zwingli went through, we were 5 miles from the killing fields of Zwingli at this. And so I thought, how full circle. This monastery had been planted to Christianize, and now it's now being a place of pagan retreat again. So what happened with Christianity became so head and a doctrinal and not creational enough, the body.
Sacramental.
The sacramental, the body. The women were saying, we want embodied religion. We want to go out and look and dance around the moon and stars and understand that we're all part of some kind of harmony here. And it stuck with me, those conversations, that Pentecostals of all people we're embodied, mm-hmm. we're material. Mm-hmm. The spirit vivifies. When we're filled with the spirit, we're a sign that the whole cosmos will one day be filled. I'm a testimony of what's going to happen. And that it's not just it's the whole cosmos is going to be filled, and it's longing to be filled. But it is to be tied to the earth, you know, is not to be pagan, because when God made the earth, he delighted.
Absolutely.
Delighted in it. And it speaks God. It sings God. It praises God. My husband, you know, we live on a farm. He called me out the other night. He said, listen. And there were two owls just calling to each other. And we sat for the longest. And one had a deep, low call on the other. And we wondered, what were they saying to each other? But that call, that sense of all creation waits with eager longing. We don't know about that eager longing. We get too spiritual for our own good. We're Gnostics.
Yeah, we want to escape. We want to
escape this world. And, you know, there's this passage in Revelation 11, the woe, you have come to when the empires of the earth are being destroyed. And one of the lines of the angels is, you have come to destroy those who destroy the earth. Mm. So God's judgment upon us, part of it is for our destruction of his beautiful earth. And we've taken the concept of not loving not the world. That is a different thing. That's the powers of the world.
Exactly.
The values.
The present
arranged
order.
Yeah, the principalities, to mean that we don't love the earth. Nowhere
right.
are we told not to love
right.
the earth. And I believe that there's so much that I think Pentecostal theologians and scholars and preachers need to develop a robust creational theology. That our pneumatology is not just but that, as the Celtics would say, there's thin space.
Thin places, yeah.
And this world and the world to come, and the earth can radiate with the glory of God at times, and also groan because of what is coming. And even as Violet Keitley said to you, the convulsions that are coming, it's like... I believe we're in the what Jesus called the beginning of birth pains. Mm-hmm. And I almost see that contemporary Christianity is in this denial that we're in labor. Mm-hmm. And that we're just going to, we're too triumphalistic. If you go to a labor delivery ward, you don't do the triumphant. You do the groaning first.
Exactly.
Now, it's not groaning without hope, but there are convulsions, and there's tearing, and there's birth. And I believe the Lord is calling us through that dream you had, that we've got to get in tune with the earth, with the heavenlies, with the spirit, with the saints, with Jesus, and groan.
We
groan this into being.
We need to pick up on this in the next one.